You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Rise and shine, fantasy players. It is a beautiful day in the neighborhood. It is the last day of July, Tuesday, July 31st, the MLB trade deadline, and we turn our attention to August and football. Let's cock-a-doodle-doo it. This is Roto Experts in the Morning, right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I am your host, Dane Martinez. They call me Speeds, the Spitting Statistician, and as always, I'm overjoyed to be joined by my man, the King, Scott Angle. Scotty, how you doing on a Tuesday?
Doing good. Check out my new article on rotoexperts.com and the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. NFC players to watch. Enter the King at checkout for a special discount. I'll have my AFC players to watch coming very soon.
Interesting. I'm going to definitely dive on into that. We were talking a lot about the Saints yesterday. Scotty, might Cam Meredith be a NFC player to watch? I think he has some interesting potential as that number two wide receiver in New Orleans. If you believe Drew Brees is going to throw for 4,500 yards, you got to think Cam Meredith can soak up some of that Willie Snead plus more. Might he have been in your article, Scotty?
He was mentioned, but he was not the Saints player to watch.
Ooh, interesting. I know you like some kids out of there as well. But definitely go on in and check out the Roto Experts exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. Enter the promo code THEKING at checkout. You'll get everything you need to get ready for drafts and ultimately to win your league and win that cash. Scotty, training camps are open across this fair land. And listen, there's news, you know, there's news of health, there's news of performance, there's news of roles. So let's dive into it. Okay, I want to start in Baltimore, and we are following this Baltimore quarterback situation, you know, pretty much every day. It's almost like a daily tracker, right? We all believe that Lamar Jackson has, you know, dynamic potential, a high ceiling, but what we don't know is what kind of opportunity he will have under center this year. Reports, though, Scotty, that Joe Flacco is having, quote-unquote, far and away his best camp. We've talked about him having the receivers out there for his own little passing camp. You know, we've talked about the potential motivation that having Lamar Jackson right behind him. Is the motivation real? Do you think Flacco holds on to this job? Tell me again what you think about this Baltimore quarterback situation with news that Flacco's actually performing well in camp.
Well, you know, maybe it's like an Alex Smith thing like last year where you know, I don't want to talk in simple narratives, but it, you know, does seem to be that way. You know, that said, you know, the receiving personnel is a little bit better, et cetera. But, you know, it's all about motivation and tangibles and, you know, being pushed for the job. And, you know, that's going to motivate Flacco, but it's just a matter of time before Jackson becomes starting quarterback, whether it's game one or game 16 or, you know, game one of next year. You know, nobody's going to draft Joe Flacco in fantasy. People are going to take Lamar Jackson in the late rounds. And, you know, right, when you look at over-unders for the Ravens, you're probably going to take the under because no matter who plays quarterback, this doesn't look like a winning situation.
Yeah, you and I both agree on that. You know, I believe I've said it on this air. I actually believe the Browns are the second place team in the NFC North this year. Let's stay in the NFC North real quick, though, because listen, this guy to me is a ghost, but apparently he's going to actually be on the practice field. I'm talking about Cincinnati Bengals tight end Tyler Eifert. Tyler Eifert passed his physical, okay? He's been cleared for practice. Now, to me, like, this is great news. This is great news because we all know, Scotty, I mean, listen, the touchdown upside of this guy, if you tell me he plays 16 games, I show you a tight end with double-digit touchdowns that winds up in the top five. Like, this opportunity is definitely there. He just hasn't been able to stay on the field. Even guys like Tyler Croft in limited duty got touchdowns and could have been an interesting DFS play. If Eifert is actually there, he becomes an important part of this offense along with A.J. Green. You talk about A.J. Green, Tyler Eifert, Joe Mixon. Now you're cooking with some gas in that offense. What do you think about are you going to go and trust Eifert? Because, I mean, he's ready to go as of now.
Yeah, as of now, but, you know, he's a major risk. Look, we talk about Josh Gordon, and you know what you're going to get. You know, you're going to see Tyler Eifert on InsideInjuries.com very often. And, you know, when he's in there, you play him. But, you know, you have to have a good tight end, too. You know, you got to take a sleeper, like at least like a Gerald Everett, you know, or somebody like that, because you can't trust. It is what it is. He's right. Great when he's there, but he's not often there. It's as simple as that. There's no expert analysis needed. Tyler Eifert is great when he's healthy, but then again, the one thing you have to worry about, the more he gets injured, how much will it rob him of his better form when he's healthy?
Yeah, that's true. You know, we say the same things about Jordan Reed over in Washington about, like, you know, how he can produce when he's there. Let me ask you something. You say there's no necessarily analysis. Here's a legit question I have for you. Scotty, let's say, and I'm going to say Reed and Eifert, because I believe they're kind of in similar boats. If you would buy that one, well, are these guys that maybe you target in a best ball kind of format?
Yeah, then you don't have to worry about the injuries nearly.
You know what I mean? Because you're going to draft the multiple. You're going to draft the second tight end anyway, right? Yeah. When you're doing best ball, right? So if I'm going to, if I wind up with, Tyler Eifert and George Kittle, I'm cool with that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Right, because doesn't the best ball mitigate some of that risk anyway?
I'd rather not, get Kittle as the other guy because he's got to prove it. I'd want somebody more solid, maybe like a Kyle Rudolph and a Tyler Eifert.
Okay, I hear you, but I'm saying, I guess my biggest question is with Reed and Eifert, because of the fact that the best ball format kind of mitigates some of that risk, you're taking the other guy anyway, you know, but then you get the upside of what we all know is the upside there. Like, if he plays, he's going to be that tight end that winds up in that starting best ball lineup a lot of times, you know what I mean? So if I can get one of those guys and mitigate some of that injury risk because of the best ball format, I actually think that is a decent way to go, and you validate me on that one maybe that's a way to go to mitigate some of the risk, right?
Yeah, certainly. It's okay. But, you know, if you're playing in a yearly league, I can't see Tyler Eifert being drafted until the final rounds.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I'm just trying to find ways. You know, we're trying to give because, like you said, there's very little analysis, right? We know what these guys are, but I do want to give the listeners something to consider. Maybe the best ball format is something to have. All right, check this out. Scotty, down in Denver, offensive lineman, that last year's, I believe, first-round pick, Garrett Bowles, went down. He was carted off. You know, and here's the thing. I went right away. Scotty, as soon as I heard this, I went on over to my Roto Experts exclusive edge package, and I looked at Brandon Murchison's article where he ranks the offensive lines and some of the things to think about in offensive lines. He already, this is Brandon Murchison on the Roto Experts package, he already had the Denver Broncos as the number 28 offensive line in the NFL. Then they go ahead and potentially lose their starting tackle, Garrett Bowles, who gets carted off. This seems like it's not so good for new quarterback Case Keenum and whoever winds up winning that running back job, whether it's Freeman or Bookham in Denver. This offensive line was already bottom five and then maybe losing one of their starters. Talk to me, Scott.
Yeah, you know, that was a big problem for them last year. And, you know, actually those ranks come from number fire and and Brandon was analyzing them. We'll have our own offensive line ranking coming from Mike Blewett, but very soon. But you know, the Broncos were more confident in the offensive line this year. You know, they revamped it a little bit, but you know, it all depends on how the backups step up here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, do you buy that? Because let's put it this way. There are a number of, like last year, I would say the last couple of years, you know, offensive line can completely undo the entire an entire season for a team. Think about the Giants last year. You know, think about some other teams where because their offensive line was not at the level that it needed to be, you know, team seasons never get out of neutral. And so if you're already one of the lower half or lower tier offensive line, and as we were talking about yesterday, Scotty, how the left tackle or the tackles are like the most important ones. That was the point you were making, you know, and think about that division. Now you're going to have a backup seeing Khalil Mack twice a year. You're going to have a backup seeing Joey Bosa and Ingram twice a year. You know, like, that does not sound good to me. A D Ford and those guys in Kansas City, like, there's some edge rushers in this division that could really spell trouble, I think, for the Denver Broncos and new quarterback.
I actually don't, because when you look at the complete report, He took a shot to the chin, and he had to be carted off. He was evaluated for a concussion, but he came back for the afternoon walkthrough, and they said he's going to be okay. But okay. You know, how big of a loss is it when you really look at Garrett Bowles last year? He was a rookie, and you know, as Pro Football Talk you know, points out, he led the Broncos in penalties with 15 last season, including 10. So, you know, Garrett Bowles, like, you don't want to see a guy go down, but who knows? It could be addition by subtraction if he went out, but sure. it doesn't appear to be anything significant.
That serious.
Sometimes a guy gets carted off, and then it doesn't turn out to be as serious as we thought, thankfully.
All right, fair enough. We know football is a violent game. Let's keep it a moving here, Scotty. We have more news that I want to bounce off of you. I go to Miami. Okay, I go to Miami, and both of us do not think necessarily that the Dolphins are going to be contenders. We both like that under. Remember, we even told Kenny in Philly that was one of my top three unders, you know, along with the Bucks and the Raiders for this season. Head coach Adam Gase, you know, interesting day. He was talking, and he admits that he's really trying to find a role for their free agent signee from Kansas City, Albert Wilson. Scott, they sign Albert Wilson in the offseason to a three-year, $24 million deal. So that's like legit money, $8 million a year to sign a wide receiver. But I look at this wide receiver room, okay? You got Kenny Stills. They signed Danny Amendola, whose mom makes the best meatballs. Hey, they got Albert Wilson. And everyone's expecting a big step from this kid, Devontae Parker, right? But then later on in the day, I saw more news that Devontae Parker is not having a good camp. That cornerback Xavier Rhodes was kind of owning him. I saw one report that was saying literally, no, Xavier Rhodes is not part of Devontae Parker's equipment, but it looks like it because he's just wearing it all the time. And so talk to me about this Dolphins wide receiver room. So many people expect Devontae Parker to take a step forward. I'm kind of on the side now, Scott, that maybe Parker is just fugazi, and you got to look at guys like Stills, Amendola, and Albert Wilson, actual NFL professional wide receivers who we've seen do it before, and kind of figure out how these guys absorb the Jarvis Landry targets. How do you think it breaks down in Miami?
When you say seen guys that done it before, I know you don't include Albert Wilson in that.
I'm talking about Kenny Stills, we've seen and at the NFL level be productive. Danny Amendola, we've seen at the NFL level be productive. Albert Wilson is obviously less so in Kansas City. He was running as like a three in Kansas City in an offense that wasn't really, you know, able to support three wide receivers. I understand that, but I'll still take Albert Wilson right now over what I've seen out of Devontae Parker.
I certainly wouldn't. There's a reason why he was the number three in Kansas City. They had terrible receiver depth before Tyreek Hill broke out. He had every opportunity to step forward, and he never did. Albert Wilson is not draftable. He's completely irrelevant for fantasy purposes. He scored 7 touchdowns in 3 years and never had more than 554 receiving yards. To me, Albert Wilson is completely irrelevant and out of the conversation. Kenny Stills is a guy who's very inconsistent as much as he's a big playmaker. I like him more as a best ball or a daily play. Yeah, Leonte Carew has never really done anything.
Out of Rutgers.
We have some brief flashes for Jakeem Grant. You know, maybe that's somebody, you know, very, very deep that can step forward. Devontae Parker has been nothing but a disappointment and nothing but blather and hype. You know, this is a bad receiving crew with a mediocre quarterback, and Danny Amendola never stays healthy. Somebody will step forward here.
And that's the question, right, Scott?
Here's the thing. Somebody will – it's almost like, and like I say in fantasy baseball, for those of you who play, it's almost like who's going to be the closer and step forward. Somebody's got to seize the opportunity, but it's got to happen through an audition process. If Amendola is somehow able to stay healthy, he can be that guy, but the guy – takes too many big hits over the middle, and he always gets hurt. So if Amendola goes down, who knows? It could be anybody from Jakeem Grant to Leonte Carew, and we just don't know. I think it's more of a thing where we're watching the waiver wire early in the season because I don't trust any of these guys.
Okay, so definitely the Miami situation may be something to keep an eye on, because if you do accurately, Scott, as we always say, like, there's some level of you have to read the tea leaves a little bit, right, to try to get ahead of this. But it looks like the Miami wide receiver core is a place to really try to read the tea leaves, because if you can figure out who is going to step up, you may get some value. The one thing I will say, Scott, is, I mean, come on, Jarvis Landry last year, fourth in the NFL with 161 targets. There's definitely some opportunity for someone to take a step forward. There's a lot of targets there to go around. And, you know, let's not forget, we also talked about, could this kid Mike Gesicki be the rare exception to start to maybe even get some opportunity in his rookie year? Scotty, I understand and agree with you the idea that Albert Wilson is not necessarily someone who moves the needle. But I'll tell you what, I'd like to be irrelevant and get $8 million a year, Scott.
Well, you know, that's looking at it from a different angle, of course.
Absolutely.
You know, there's,
absolutely.
You know, you know, there's backup quarterbacks, you know, a third stringer. Did you like to make that kind of money?
Yeah,
but they're
sure.
They're not relevant in fantasy.
No, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. But the idea of pass catchers in Miami, what we know is that Jarvis Landry's not there. There's 10 targets a game up for grabs, right? And if we don't, you know, someone needs to go ahead and grab that brass ring. I'm going to tell you, though,
necessarily that there's 110 up for grabs, that the guys, you know, who are left are capable of, you know, equaling that amount. And if they do, you say there's 110 receptions up for grabs. You know, Jarvis Landry earned those 110 receptions with his exceptional talent. There's no proof that anybody that's on the Dolphins roster can step up and, you know, take a high percentage of that. And then if you split that among three or four guys, you're talking mediocrity.
Yeah, no, I hear you, Scott, and I don't think but on some level, they have to throw somewhere. Like, I'm not saying anyone's going to take, 100% of them, but I'm saying there's opportunity there. Like, the fact that Landry's not there represents opportunity for someone. I agree with you that, you know, it's not going to, like, all fall to Kenny Stills or anything like that, but, like, this does represent opportunity for someone. We talk about in fantasy football how it's really a mix of your skill and the opportunity that is there. For someone, it's going to be an opportunity to get a whole mess of targets. What they do with it, we don't know just yet, but there is the opportunity there, right? I mean, Scott, you agree with me on that. There is some opportunity for one of these guys to take a step forward.
There's opportunity, but the other part of it, as I always say it, is opportunity doesn't always lead to production necessarily. Now, look, right, there could be somebody that steps forward that we just don't expect. Like, it could be a Jakeem Grant. You know, that's a guy that, you know, maybe can step forward. We saw him make a few big plays last year. But I'm not confident that most of these guys, you know, have what it takes to step up and take advantage of the opportunity. For all we know, this offense could be terrible, and they could just be a bunch of three and outs. I saw one Miami beat writer who's been covering the team for years. He expects Kenyon Drake to lead the team in receptions.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible. Maybe it's Kenyon Drake out of the passing game who takes this opportunity. I mean, you know, I'm not necessarily identifying who it is, but there is some opportunity. Like, here's the way I think about it, Scott. And I'd like to, you know, for us to think about this. There's two factors in this, okay, Scott? One, when I talk about every team, any team in the NFL, you have to think about the size of the overall offensive pie, right? Like you talk about, the production. It might be a team that sucks and is just three and outs, right? The first thing I think about is the size of the pie, right? Like, how good of an offense is it? The Green Bay Packers pie is much bigger than, than the Buffalo Bills pie. You know what I mean? So that opportunity. Then after that, you have to think about the slices of the pie and who's going to get that. Now let's bring it back to the Miami Dolphins. You're absolutely right. The entire Dolphins pie could be smaller this year. Their offense could be crappy, you know, and I'll give you that. But whatever size of the pie is, the Jarvis Landry slice of that pie has to be absorbed, whether it's by, you know, one person taking a big chunk of it or split up evenly. You know, those are the ways to think about
it. It doesn't have to be absorbed. because you're talking about 110 catches. If the offense is not good, that 110
right, that's the size of the pie.
No, but that the slice of the pie can become smaller because the playmakers are not there. 110 could become 90 or 80.
Yes, and that's my exact first point, Scott, that the size of the pie could dramatically shrink. I give you that, right? But there's two factors here, what the offense does overall, and then who are the people in the pieces of that offense. But regardless, we are going to keep an eye on that because whoever, wherever the opportunity lies, we have to be ahead of the game, read the tea leaves for the people here on Roto Experts, and especially for the Roto Experts Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. One piece of news, Scott, I want to ask you about, and this is a pie that we all think is probably going to be pretty big. And we're talking about the Green Bay Packers over there. I saw an interesting piece of news, Scott. I want to get your take on it. They're talking about how Ty Montgomery, you know, how Jamal Williams is running kind of as the early down kind of back. And Ty Montgomery is firmly entrenching himself as the kind of third down, this PPR back. Now, last year when he made that shift, Scotty, from a wide receiver to a running back, he didn't really have too much time with Aaron Rodgers under center to be his kind of like PPR running back. Here's what I want to understand, Scott. You know, we see all these like kind of pass catching backs out of the backfield, the Theo Riddicks, the Chris Thompsons, the Christian McCaffreys of the world. I guess my question is, with Aaron Rodgers under center, couldn't Ty Montgomery wind up being one of the better kind of PPR backs this year in the NFL? I wonder, like, why is he not talked about with the Riddicks or the Thompsons of the world in that kind of role for Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers? This is a guy who literally was a wide receiver and now is going to play this kind of PPR role. I think there could be potential value with Ty Montgomery, Scott.
Yeah, he's not talked about because you talk about a piece of the pie and he's going to be sharing it. He might be the third out of three running backs when Aaron Jones comes back. And being a third down back, you know, very often means, you know, you might not be on the field for the other two downs. So it's very uncertain what role Ty Montgomery is going to play. There was talk that even if before Aaron Jones got suspended, that they were going to trade him. Now, look, there's a possibility that Ty Montgomery could slip back into the wide receiver mix if Geronimo Allison or rookie Jamon Moore don't step forward. But I think that's kind of hard because, you know, whoever suits up at wide receiver, Aaron Rodgers is going to make them relevant. So Ty Montgomery's very buried down the depth chart. And what you're talking about makes sense from an NFL perspective, but he may not get enough reps or receptions to make a fantasy difference.
Interesting. And I hear what you're saying, okay? Do me a favor then. Compare him to, say, Duke Johnson, right? Because in Cleveland, you got two backs, right? You got Hyde, you got Chubb. You're talking about a full-on committee with Duke Johnson, but Duke Johnson has his role as the PPR third down kind of back. I'm making kind of a similar analogy for Ty Montgomery to Duke Johnson. Why wouldn't he be able to do the same kind of things as Duke Johnson? If we believe the Packers offense is a, you know, to go back to our analogy, a bigger pie, so there's more production to go around for Green Bay than there is in Cleveland. You know, compare for me Ty Montgomery to, say, Duke Johnson.
They're different styles of player. That's why he's a different style of player than a Duke Johnson, a Chris Thompson, a Theo Riddick. You know, guys know more for their speed and, you know, their sprinkle. You're talking about, when you talk about Ty Montgomery, he's more of a physical player and not a big play guy. So, you know, when, that's why they use him at running back, because they feel like he can be a very physical, hammering kind of presence, which they also now have in Jamal Williams. He's not the style of player like Duke Johnson.
Okay, fair enough. We'll see. We'll see what happens because of the role that maybe the Packers have him in. I just think it's interesting for someone to have that kind of third down role in an Aaron Rodgers led offense. You know, we do believe the Green Bay Packers are going to be productive. Another thing to keep your eye on, because he is running exclusively as their third down back, at least at this point in practice. So keep an eye out on that.
Why,
I also want to tell you,
why would it be so much more interesting than any other third down back? And Duke Johnson and Theo Riddick are not just third down backs when you also have Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams running on first and second down.
I just told you, because similar to Cleveland, where you have Nick Chubb and Carlos Hyde running on first and second down, I think the production that the third down back gets in Green Bay is better than the production the third down back gets in most other teams.
But Duke Johnson
the Green Bay
got
back.
Duke Johnson got all those numbers last year because they were very hurting at wide receiver, which is no longer the case. You know, they.
So you
they
think you think Duke Johnson will underperform this year?
Yeah, there's a very good chance that his numbers could go down this year because he's not as fantasy numbers because he's not as integral in a desperation sort of way that he was last year. You know, Ty Montgomery's on the field for third down, but if he's not on the field for first and second down, you know, he's not getting enough reps to help your fantasy team.
Right, but that's the thing with all of these pass-catching guys, Scotty. Chris Thompson, they're going to try and manage his reps as well.
Theo Riddick was on the field a lot because they didn't have a good running game.
Right, and they drafted Kerryon Johnson and signed LeGarrette Blount to fix that. We'll keep on talking about it as we go on. As we go on here, it's Roto Experts in the Morning. The King, Scott Engel. The Spitting Statistician, Dane Martinez. We got a lot more to discuss, including your burning questions this year for fantasy football. Come on right back. It's Roto Experts in the Morning.
Are you new to Daily Fantasy? Are you a veteran? Either way, you can better your chances of winning money, and lots of it, by going to DailyRoto.com. Multiple people have become millionaires thanks to the guys at Daily Roto. Why not take advice from the experts? You can become a millionaire too. Just go to DailyRoto.com to rock Daily Fantasy Sports.
Little Tone Loki on Roto Experts in the Morning. What's up, Scotty? You get down with the funky Cole Medina?
Yeah, you want to know a fact about this song?
Tell me.
That riff right there that they're sampling?
That's right.
That's
it. Oh, interesting. I like that.
16.
All right, a little funky Cole Medina, a little wild thing, Tone Loke, bringing it back. We put the fun in functional sports radio here every morning, 7 to 9 a.m. It's Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Hey, Scotty, we were talking about some of these PPR backs and their value in that role. You know, we've talked about a lot of those guys. But remember, things you have to consider are who these early down guys are, what kind of opportunity they will have, and the size, what I'm calling the size of the pie, the overall production of that team. But Scotty, I also, you know, you were talking about gambling news as well. We got to tell people to go on over to mybookie.ag, enter the promo code FNTSY, and you'll get a little bit of a promo code. Excuse me, Scotty. And then, you know, you get a little bit of extra cash at deposit. So we've already told you about some season win total over-unders. We'll preview even some player props, you know, things like MVPs, Rookie of the Year, stuff like that, as we get closer to the preseason kicking off. But Scotty, I want to remind people they need to go on over to the Roto Experts and get the Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. We're going to dive into this article here by Chris Mitchell. You were talking about how this is like the biggest article ever, the 20 biggest questions heading into fantasy football 2018. What are we going to see here, Scotty?
We're going to see a lot of comprehensive burning topics here answered by this FFWA award winner.
All right, absolutely. So let's dive on in. And, you know, Chris Mitchell does a great job here for Roto Experts. Some of the burning questions are things that we have, in fact, discussed before. Things like the zero running back strategy. Things like when do I draft a quarterback. The question I want to ask you that we haven't really discussed much, Scott, is where's the appropriate place to draft Gronk? You know, we talk about the tight ends. You know, we talk about the tight ends and that tier, right, of Kelce, Gronk, and Ertz, who most people believe is a solid tier of three. We talk about how there's so many tight ends, you know, kind of, I don't know, maybe that 8 to 12 range, let's say, the names we throw out all the time, the Burtons of the world, right? And then there's that middle tier, kind of, I would say, tight ends 4 through 9, let's say. This is where we're talking about Graham and Olsen and Rudolph and Walker and Ingram, and there's those guys. I think when we're talking about Gronk, you always have to consider the gap between Gronk and whoever that other tight end is, and if it's a value to go on, because you got to really take Gronk. What, late second round is where he's going to be? What do you think about drafting Gronk? Are you spending up for Gronkowski and his injury history?
No, it's like I probably wouldn't think Gronkowski till at least the fourth round. And
really?
He's going to be gone. He's going to be gone by then. I don't believe in taking quarterbacks and tight ends.
So you're not
going
to have many shares of Gronk, right?
No, I don't believe in taking quarterbacks and tight ends early. I want to load up on running backs and wide receivers.
Yeah, me too. Like, you know, I am, for me, depending on, you know, the roster and the format of your league. But I'm telling you, my first, oh, I don't know, five rounds, let's say, I'm going running back and receiver. I'm getting my two running backs. I'm getting my three wideouts, depending on how many you have to start, right? And then when we talk about, like, let the draft come to you, after I get those guys, then I pick my head up, and then I see kind of where are we on quarterback? Where are we on tight end? Is there any value that I can grab there, or do I continue to kind of wait? And that's the way I'll do it, right? Almost as it comes around to me pretty much every time, I'm going to be like, do I need to pull the trigger on quarterback yet? Do I need to pull the trigger on tight end yet? The answer is probably no, and then I go right back to my wide receivers and running back. Scott, what do you think?
That's okay, but you can't have a firm plan.
You know what I mean. Generally speaking.
Yeah, to me, what I'd like to do is in the first four rounds, I'd like to come out with two running backs and two wide receivers, and I really don't start thinking consciously about quarterback until at least the sixth round. Or tight.
Scott, you said this. You said the same exact thing I just said.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I agree with you. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you were like, you can't have this firm thing, and then you said it was the same thing as I said. So you have, yeah, it's not firm, but like, you know, you generally approach it similar to the Spitting Statistician, yeah?
Right, but I don't go in with a locked in strategy. You know, a lot of people are going to call our station at 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-84-FNTSY. And they're going to say, well, you know, I've been doing some mocks, and I was thinking, you know, going running back, wide receiver, running back, or two wide receivers to start. What do you think of that? And you can't lock yourself into a strategy.
No, I appreciate that, yeah. Scotty. And, you know, you're still always – it's all relative. You let the draft come to you, let's say. Let's say I'm generally thinking that I'm going to do that. I'm going to get my running backs, my wide receivers. But let's say I'm drafting in the fifth round and Rob Gronkowski is still there. I might go ahead and take it. You know what I mean? So I hear you, but generally speaking, I'm looking to I'm looking to prioritize my running back and wide receiver position over tight end and quarterback because I know I can find the value later on. You buy that one, Scotty?
Yeah, I think so too. It's, you know, quarterback, it's so deep. Like, you know, in our mock, which is the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football package, you know, you saw Phillip Rivers going in round 12.
Right.
Now, look, expert drafts push the quarterbacks down even farther. But in a mainstream draft, you know, you're going to see quarterbacks go as early as the first or second round. But you can still get a Phillip Rivers in the ninth or the tenth.
Yeah, we've talked about a lot of these guys, and you may, you know, for you, the names may be slightly different. You may like one of these guys more or less, but we're talking Rivers, we're talking Stafford, we're talking, you know, Luck even, who could still be down there. So, I mean, there's some opportunity, depending on what you like, coming to you. Hey, Scotty, there's another piece, a question I want to ask you. It's a burning question from Chris Mitchell, and he's talking about new faces in new places, right? He cites, you know, and kind of who's moving. Movement whose ADPs are really moving a lot because of their where they are that's new. He cites Jerick McKinnon in San Francisco, Case Keenum in Denver, and Jordy Nelson out there in Oakland. These are some new faces in new places. I've got some others to think about as well. One of these guys or others, tell me one or two of the new faces you are most interested in seeing this year and really think that the new place they're in could represent some value for them. Who do you like? Is it McKinnon, Nelson, or someone else?
It's not McKinnon. I think people are overhyping him and expecting him to be this Devonta Freeman type of workhorse, which I just don't think he's built for being after watching him in the past. Okay. I think Jordy Nelson is interesting because, you know, everybody attributes to playing with Aaron Rodgers, but Jordy Nelson is very talented on his own. But, you know, you didn't see that because of Brett Hundley last year. Yeah, I think he recovered to be a wide receiver 3/4. But I'm not looking for a big step forward. Allen Robinson
is interesting too.
But I think that offense is going to take some time to gel. Allen Hurds could be interesting because, you know, the Cowboys really lack, like, he's not a wide receiver one. But, you know, there could be some volume there because like I keep saying, that's the worst receiving crew in the NFC. So I'm very interested to see that as well. And Tyrod Taylor's very interesting. Hugh Jackson is coming out this week and reaffirming that he's definitely the number one quarterback there. And, you know, we've seen Tyrod Taylor be play like a top 10 fantasy quarterback in the past. So I didn't want to go for the obvious. So, you know, there's some other guys I just wanted to throw out there.
Yeah, fair enough. I like that, too. I think Allen Robinson is very intriguing, Scotty. I mean, you rewind the clock about 2 years, right? And he was in that conversation as a wide receiver one for fantasy owners, okay? And now he's moving to a team. He's free of Blake Bortles, you know what I mean? A lot of people believe that Trubisky is, you know, moving in the right direction, developing in the right way, developing at a faster pace and at a better, in a better way than Blake Bortles ever was. He's going to this new system with Nagy. You know, the Bears haven't had a 1,000-yard receiver in a very long time. I believe there is, you know, there's a chance that Allen Robinson could break that mold. The other guy that I'm thinking is very interesting, one that you did not name yet, Scotty, and I mean, we all know the name, but we think about it, going back to the going back to a team that we talked about, you know, in the top of the show, the Green Bay Packers. I think Jimmy Graham is real interesting, Scott. You know, I think Jimmy Graham, especially in the red zone with Aaron Rodgers. Now, don't get me wrong. I know Davante Adams is one of those big kind of touchdown outside receivers, but I would not be surprised if Jimmy Graham once again gets double-digit touchdowns in Green Bay and kind of is in that mix over in tight end, you know, I don't know, five, tight end six or something like that, a definitive tight end one on a week-to-week basis. I think the Graham-Rodgers combination could be very, very interesting. They've been trying out new tight ends there ever since Bubba Franks, you know, trying to get a great fit with Aaron Rodgers. So he's someone I think is interesting, and I really like Allen Robinson as well. Scotty, percent chance in your mind that Allen Robinson does get 1,000 yards this year?
1,000 yards isn't, you know, some super accomplishment. If he's 1,100, then I'm, you know, I'm thinking he's having a big year. So, you know, I think he'd certainly do it. Or, you know, looking at maybe a floor of like 10, 25 yards or so. But, you know, it really depends, you know, on how quickly him and Trubisky click. You know, especially in that read option offense, I think there's going to be a lot of quick hits, and I'm more looking for him to be a PPR TD guy than a yardage guy.
Okay, fair enough. The touchdowns we do think will be there, and maybe he's a PPR kind of tight end as opposed to the yardage, as Scott mentioned. It's one of these burning questions here, again from Chris Mitchell, is this idea, you know, it's some of the new faces in new places, but really focused on the quarterbacks. Scotty, you know, we talked about Case Keenum moving to Dan. It was sort of like a merry-go-round, right? Alex Smith moves to Washington, right? Then Kirk Cousins moves to Minnesota, right? Then Case Keenum moves to Denver. We've also obviously talked about Jimmy G Spot moving over to San Francisco. Of those four guys, Scott, which one do you think is primed to, maybe with the pieces around them, or maybe with the new scheme that they're getting into, or maybe because you just think they're the best quarterback? Like, who do you think is most set up for success? Is it Cousins or someone else?
So you got Cousins, Garoppolo, and who else
Keenum,
did you say?
Keenum is new in Denver, and Alex Smith taking over for Cousins in Washington.
Yeah, I'd zap out those last two, especially Keenum. Okay. Not that Smith couldn't be respectable. It comes down to Cousins or Garoppolo. And that's a very tough call, but I have Cousins ranked higher because he's got better wide receivers.
Okay, yeah, I hear you. You know,
and he's got a running back that I think you feel more comfortable about in Dalvin Cook than Jerick McKinnon.
Tight end as well, right? Most people like Rudolph over Kittle as well. Rudolph, that dependable kind of guy, that could be a quarterback's new best friend. And we all know, though, both of these guys, we know that they come from places that do utilize the tight end. So that'll be interesting. Like, I guess here's my question. We talk about, like, this adjustment period. We like to throw that out, right? We've talked about that. There may be an adjustment period in San Francisco. There may be an adjustment period in Minnesota. Like, what goes into that adjustment period, Scott? Is it like the change in, you know, verbiage of the scheme that they're going to? I've heard even a lot of new veteran quarterbacks who switch teams are saying like, oh, it's kind of like unlearning French and learning Japanese, you know, with the terminology that they need to use in the playbook. That's the spider two wah banana kind of stuff. Is it about just getting the chemistry with the wide, with the pass catchers? You know, we talk about like having those back shoulder throws or just kind of like knowing what to do on hot routes. Is that what the adjustment is in turning to learn your new skill positions and learning the verbiage? Or are there other things involved that I don't think about?
Verbiage.
Red 69 laser.
There you
Red
go.
69 laser
exactly.
on three.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's a great point. You know, it's like learning a different language, but you not only have to learn the terminology, you have to get on the same page with everybody in terms of the execution. You know, that this is why it's, you know, it's such a challenging sport. These guys are equipped for it, but, you know, it takes time. Look at Matt Ryan. You know, the first year he was with Kyle Shanahan, he was terrible.
Right.
And the second year he took him to the Super Bowl. So I think that's a great example right there.
So let me ask you this then. Last year, let's talk about Matt Ryan. Last year, Matt Ryan, people said, had something of a down year. But remember, it was the first year in this Steve Sarkisian offense. Are you now saying maybe, Scotty, because this is the second year in that offense, he's got more time there? We know they have weapons in Atlanta. Could this then, like you say, the adjustment period or the getting more familiar with a new scheme, could those be reasons to see something of a bounce back from Matt Ryan? I mean, we like Julio, we like Devontae Freeman. He's got weapons out there.
Yeah, you know, Calvin Ridley could be the best rookie wide receiver out there. As far as Devonta Freeman, though, I was reading some great stuff from Stefania Bell over on ESPN, and you know, she's talking about, you know, not only the the soft tissue injuries, but also the concussions. So you got to be careful with Devonta Freeman. But they still got Tevin Coleman. And, you know, Ito Smith could be a nice third down back if, you know, they choose to use him as well, the rookie. So there's a lot of options there. When a quarterback like Ryan, who's savvy and veteran, there's always a potential for a bounce back to top 10. I think it'd be a lot of people expecting another MVP year. But, you know, there wouldn't be a super shock either. I think you take Matt Ryan as a QB2, and you're pretty comfortable with it. You just can't go based on last year.
Exactly. You know, like to that same rationale that we were just talking about, right? The adjustment period kind of idea to a new scheme. I mean, I look, Scotty, in your ranks, at least the ones I'm seeing right now, you have Matty Ryan, it looks like, as QB 17, you know, which is kind of in the middle of that QB2 range, right? I would take a chance. I would take a chance on a guy like Matt Ryan, let's say, over a guy like Alex Smith, because of what you're just saying, this adjustment period. Ryan, maybe with a whole new offseason with Sarkisian, maybe he is someone who could be primed for a little bit of a bounce back. This is a guy who has been an NFL MVP. We like the weapons around them. We know the Falcons are a team that can score points, especially inside in that dome. I think Matt Ryan, you know, I think people may be looking past Matt Ryan a little bit for that same reason. Scotty, one last question I have for you here in the Burning Questions article out of Chris Mitchell. And we zone in on the New England Patriots running back situation. Now, listen, I believe it has been for years and years and years a fool's errand to try to predict the Patriots running backs, right? With James White and Deion Lewis and Gillislee and Burkhead and who knows who's going to be there. Do you expect the same kind of committee this year? Or do you think there's a chance that anybody can kind of step forward and be a week-to-week dependable kind of guy there in New England?
Why would we think anything's going to change here other than the fact that they drafted a running back early? You know,
right.
If anybody, I'd be drafting Sony Michel. I'm still uncertain. I'm still uncertain of the role, but, you know, I think it hurts Rex Burkhead. It hurts James White, et cetera. But, you know, you just have to, you have to be smart and, you know, look backward as well as forward. You know, maybe there's more of a chance for Sony Michel, but I see people taking him over guys like Darius Geis, et cetera,
right.
Or Ronald Jones, because they feel like he's in a better offense. I wouldn't do that. You don't know what Sony Michel's role is going to be in an offense like this. They may have drafted in the first round to be the lead ball carrier, but they'll still throw different offensive wrinkles at opposing defenses and utilize other running backs. So, you know, one week you'd be getting 15 carries, the next week it could be 12, the next could be 7. They drafted him high because obviously they want more stability as a ball carrier, but that doesn't mean that all of a sudden he's going to be set up to be get a workload, you know, in terms of the same as Darius Geis or Ronald Jones. And,
sure,
you know, when people were drafting early, you know, Royce Freeman, et cetera, you know, Royce Freeman's not guaranteed. And again, look, you know, I said this last month, and, you know, people poo-pooed me and shot me down. You know, there's a lot of talk in Seattle that, you know, it's going to be a timeshare between Chris Carson and Rashard Penny. And that I believe it was Greg Rosenthal of the NFL Network was out of camp, and he said, Chris Carson looks like friggin' Iron Man. You know, he looks terrific, very physical, in terrific shape. So that doesn't mean Rashard Penny's out of the picture, though. They might use a combination of Carson and Penny, hurting both guys' value. And if somehow C.J. Procise can stay healthy, he's in the mix, too, as a third-down back because, you know, of his just how dangerous he is as a pass catcher, and he's maybe a better pass protector than the other two. So we don't know what's going on in Seattle. The problem is everybody assumes who's going to be the best. But, you know, Pete Carroll doesn't look at it like that. You know, even though he drafted Rashard Penny in the first round, and, you know, he's not just a coach. You know, he's a front office guy as well in a hybrid role. That doesn't mean he's going to hand him the role. It's got to be earned, and people can't assume it's just going to be Rashard Penny.
All right, fair enough. Taking it back to what we were talking about before in New England, and then you make the point again about, like, say, guys like Geis or Ronald Jones. It comes back to what we were saying before. You're telling me that people may be
opportunity
drafting right,
is what Sony you were Michelle. Saying before, yeah. Opportunity. Right. And when you're looking at these very talented rookie running backs, you have to look at the opportunity. And Jones and Geis are the top ones with opportunity outside of Saquon Barkley.
Right. So, and you're saying that some people may be drafting Michelle because they think that offense is better, a.k.a. the size of the pie, but there are so many other people to consider. I agree with you. You know, we're not talking about Saquon here, but Ronald Jones and Darius Geis probably do have a faster path to touches and opportunity and a bigger slice of the pie, regardless of if that pie is slightly smaller than the one up there in New England. Let me ask you one other thing, though. Let me bounce one other idea or angle off of you, Scotty. When we're talking about the Patriots running backs, do you think that there's any chance that we see in New England what we saw in New Orleans last year, which was like kind of an evolution as their Hall of Fame quarterback does get on in age, the idea of maybe relying a little bit more on the run game to help not only their, you know, their offense, but their defense as well. Do you think maybe Belichick is trying to get ahead of the game and Sony Michel is part of what give maybe the Patriots do run a little bit more a la the Saints of last year with an aging Hall of Fame quarterback?
Nah. I don't see those tea leaves at all. You know, okay. Why change what's worked?
I mean, why change? You know, you had a great offense in New England. I mean, in New Orleans off, and also.
Yeah, but how many Super Bowls has New Orleans gone to? One?
One?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Patriots would have been 12. You know, why are they going to mess with success?
Okay, if you say so, because things change from year to year. But let's keep it moving here, Scotty, because
not,
in Major
not
League
much
Baseball,
in New England. Not
Scotty, we
got
to go to Major League Baseball. We only have a couple of minutes left, Scotty.
Okay.
And so because today was, in fact, the trade deadline, so there is some news. There are some moves that have been made in the last 24 hours that we need to get to with the last couple of minutes that we have in this hour of Roto Experts in the Morning. Listen, Scotty, Ian Kinsler goes from the Angels to the Red Sox. Adam Duvall gets traded to the Atlanta Braves to help that outfield. Lance Lynn to the Yankees. You know, we talk about they don't have this maybe number two starter. Are they trying to swing and get a number of innings eaters and the back end of the bullpen. Adam Warren to Seattle. Keon Keeler to Pittsburgh in a one that's a little curious to me. And then what I think is interesting, Roberto Osuna to the Houston Astros. His suspension is going to be up, and it looks like the Astros, unlike other teams, were okay with the character issues there. They just want a stable guy to back end of that bullpen. Which one of these trades, if any, moved the needle for you, Scott? I'm very intrigued by Osuna being added to the Astros bullpen.
Yeah, I am too, because right now we're completely playing closer musical chairs here
right
over the last 2 days and today. And, you know, that's why in my baseball league I went out and picked up, you know, alternate closers like John Hicks, you know, mm-hmm. et cetera. because, you know, you just don't know who's going to
You mean
end
Jordan
up.
Hicks in St. Louis?
Jordan Hicks. I'm sorry. Yeah. I always say John Hicks.
It's okay.
You know, picking up guys like Jose Jimenez. And I had Yates Giles.
And Stammen in San Diego potentially
Yates is going to be hard to move. Stammen might get moved, but you have to know all these alternate possible situations with closers potentially getting moved. Addison Reed, if Fernando Rodney gets moved. So right now that zap it over the next 3 weeks, it's going to zap the fantasy value of Hector Rondon, because Rondon's looks shaky in the past, although he's done a nice job. And now Ken Giles actually becomes the closer in Toronto, because they can groom him for next year for the role. You know, let him have his blow-ups, but, you know, they want to, you know, help him regain his confidence. And I think it's a good deal for Toronto. And, you know, if you need some saves help, you know, you can get Giles. And then, you know, there was the move of Keon Keela, which
right, to Pittsburgh.
Also was interesting, because now maybe Jake Diekman is probably going to close for the Rangers. So you have to watch all of this. You know, the closer report when it comes through this week is going to be very interesting from George Kurtz on rotoexperts.com. But I find it so interesting. You know, Bud Norris could be moved, but yet, like, Pittsburgh is right next to St. Louis in the standings, yet Pittsburgh is making trades involved in rumors like they're contending. Meanwhile, St. Louis is acting like a bunch of sellers.
Yeah, who is buying and who is selling? I thought the Keela to Pittsburgh move was kind of interesting. But listen, Scotty, we're also hearing that there may be a new big fish out there. The Washington Nationals are saying they are open to discussing Bryce Harper. Now, I don't know that that's going to happen. Maybe they're just sending that flare gun out to see if anyone wants to get crazy and blow them away. What do you think about this? Them sending signals that maybe Harper is on the move. What does that mean for the Nationals as buyers or sellers or anything else? Do you think Harper gets moved today in the next 12 hours?
Like you said, flare gun to see what kind of return they could get. You put it perfectly. If you play in an NL-only league, it was your first-round pick. He's always already killing you in your batting average. You don't want to see him traded out of the player universe. But the Nationals, overrated team for years, never won a playoff series despite all that talent. And this may be a sign that, you know, they're about to move into a new era. Probably the biggest underachievers I've seen since the Atlanta Braves, like earlier in the decade.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll see what the Washington Nationals do as they look themselves in the mirror today. They know they're not getting anything from Harper moving forward. Do they cut bait and flip it right now? Good hours, Scott. I'll talk to you tomorrow. More baseball to recap of the trade deadline and news from around the training camps. You have a great day, Scotty. We'll talk tomorrow. Right. Jake Seeley coming up next on Roto Experts in the Morning.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Welcome back to Roto Experts in the Morning, right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I'm your host, Dane Martinez, Speed the Spitting Statistician. And as usual, the King Scott Engel makes the hot tag into my man, the all-in kid, Jake Seeley, the number one accuracy ranker in the business. We're going to start to dive into his ranks on Roto Experts in the Morning. Jake, how you feeling, brother man, early on a Tuesday?
I'm doing good. I would have done better if I didn't finish in fifth place for the DKMS challenge yesterday.
Oh, that is unfortunate. It's only the winner that moves on to get entered into the so you were just a couple of spots shy. Who was it that just didn't make up that gap for you? Is there anybody specifically you're pissed off at because they went 0-4?
No, I'm disappointed that Robbie Ray struggled at the end of, like, he was started off well and then he kind of collapsed, and then stupid walk-off home runs by everybody and their brother last night.
Yeah, it's a little bit crazy. A little bit later on in this hour, Jake, we are going to touch a little bit on Major League Baseball, because today is the MLB trading deadline, the non-waiver trading deadline, and there are some people on the move. I want to get Jake Seeley's thoughts on kind of the repercussions of those, especially, listen, if you're hunting for saves, there's some opportunity with new closers stepping up in a lot of different places. A little bit later on in the show, we'll touch base with the all-in kid about that. Jake, we also, in my opinion, at least from my rankings. I have a new number one fantasy football team name in my top five. We'll bounce off some new submissions off you a little bit later on as we put the fun in functional sports radio. But some news and notes from around NFL camp yesterday. I want to get your read on. Jake, hey, listen. Tyler Eifert passed his physical. He is cleared for practice. He's going to be out there. Now, listen, I know that, like, maybe we believe this, maybe we don't, but I want to ask you a couple questions about this. Like, how comfortable are you with Tyler Eifert moving forward? You know, we got a guy like Jordan Reed who's in something of a similar boat in terms of, you know, what we expect and the idea of how much risk we take on. We both know that if these guys play 16 games, we see double-digit touchdown potential upside. But, like, do you believe in Tyler Eifert? Do you believe he's going to be actually there for the Bengals this year? Because as I mentioned to Scott last hour, if you got AJ Green and Tyler Eifert and maybe a ascending Joe Mixon, maybe there is something to this Cincinnati offense, even with the Red Rifle under center. Do you believe in Eifert to stay healthy?
No, that'd be stupid to believe that. I don't know anybody out there who would be dumb enough to believe that Tyler Eifert's going to play 16 games, because it doesn't happen, and the guy hasn't been healthy in years. He's the definition of injury prone. You can't draft Tyler Eifert as your only tight end. That'd be the dumbest thing you could possibly do.
Okay, let me ask you about it this way, Jake. You know, in different formats, we have sometimes different strategies. Would Eifert, and I'm going to zoom out to Jordan Reed as well, would they be people to potentially get in a best ball format, Jake, because you got to draft multiple tight ends best ball anyway, right? And then you kind of mitigate some of that risk that's involved and you still get some of the upside. What about in best ball formats?
Yeah, obviously it's better than that, but at the same time, you're kind of forcing yourself to draft three tight ends because you got to factor in that they could miss time. So it's whether or not you want to waste your bench. Like if I'm in a 20-man best ball or 20-man roster best ball, I'm probably not doing it because I'm not going to waste a third spot with that thin of a bench. I'd rather get more running backs or wide receivers.
Okay, so like, but at some level, you know, at some point, you know, like you said, maybe if it's not, you know, not a 20-man draft, but at some point, do you agree that in, you know, it does a best ball format could mitigate some of the risk?
Yeah, so I said yes. I said yes to start. I just wouldn't do it with that shallow of a roster.
Cool. Let's keep it moving, Jake. Another thing that we saw, you know, interesting. I don't know. I mean, he was carted off yesterday, you know, kind of as an injury. But then we heard that he kind of returned. It may have not have been like a leg issue. It may have been a head issue. I'm talking about Garrett Bowles on the Denver offensive line. I went over to the Roto Experts Exclusive Edge Fantasy Package, Jake, and Brandon Murchison has an interesting article, okay, where he's digging into some of these offensive line values or ranks, and they are already ranking Denver as the 28th best offensive line. We're talking about a bottom five offensive line. Now, I know that Bowles kind of returned for a little bit of the afternoon session, but, you know, if these guys get banged up, you saw what happened to the Giants last year because of this, or Cincinnati, let's say, or Indianapolis, Minnesota in years past. What could this mean for a new quarterback, Case Keenum, or whoever is that running back there, whether it's Freeman or Devontae Booker, this idea that you know, A, the offensive line is really struggling, and what if they lose a first-round pick that they had from last year? I know we're not, you know, we don't talk about offensive lines too much, but does the Broncos' offensive line give you cause for pause for some of their skill players?
I think that the ranking's a little bit low to begin with. I mean, this team also was forced to start four different people and do two different spots on the right side of their offensive line last year. They never got anything going on the right side, so I think it's better than people think it is. Bowles would obviously be a significant loss, though. I mean, that's somebody that they struggled to get going last year as a rookie, which isn't understandable, especially if you're on the left side. But, yeah, you can't lose Bowles and not have that affect you.
Yeah, I'm thinking about this. Like, as their left tackle, I mean, they're going to see Khalil Mack twice a season. They're going to see what I believe is one of the best pass-rushing combos with the Chargers and Ingram and Bosa. So definitely, if they want to keep their new prize quarterback, Case Keenum, upright and clean, you know, they're going to need all links on that chain down there in Denver. Another thing that I saw yesterday, Jake, I want to talk about this Miami wide receiving core. Okay, because earlier on in the day, I saw something where head coach Adam Gase was like, yeah, we are still trying to figure out the role for Albert Wilson. This is a guy they spent $8 million a year, 3 years, $24 million in the offseason. They bring in Danny Amendola as well in the offseason. I got to tell you, Jake, his mama makes the best meatballs, Danny Amendola. You know there's Stills there. There's Devontae Parker as well. But then later on in the day, I saw another report out of Miami practice that, like, listen, Devontae Parker is not really doing it. Cornerback Xavier Rhodes, no, excuse me, not Xavier, is like all over him, wearing him as a suit. Like, someone was like, he's part of Devontae Parker's equipment. I think a lot of people are assuming that it's Devontae Parker that's going to take this kind of step forward and ascend to be the man and soak up some of the targets left by Jarvis Landry. But I'm not so sure, Jake. Might there be more value? And I think you've talked about guys like Kenny Stills potentially. Might there be more value if you look to some of these other guys in Miami and make the assumption that no, it will not be Devontae Parker? Who do you think is the main beneficiary in Miami because Jarvis Landry is not there anymore?
I mean, everybody, but it's not the fact of who's the beneficiary. It's the fact that if you look at the past three seasons, Kenny Stills has been the better wide receiver, and Kenny Stills continues to be the better wide receiver. And now you're hearing the fact that is what you're talking about, this report and all the worries that Devontae Parker doesn't even look good this year, which last year was completely the opposite. Everybody was glowing about Devontae Parker every single time. And look, Kenny Stills is the better receiver for the Dolphins. I said this how many few weeks ago? I don't know if it was you or with Corey or it was somewhere on this network. I said, are we really doing this again with Devontae Parker? Like, how many times are we going to do this? This is like similar to Kevin White with you. You know, he's going to break through and be healthy this year. And I love both these guys based on talent alone, but talent doesn't always matter because if you don't stay healthy, if you can't put it together on the field. Marquise Lee was one of the more talented wide receivers when he came out of college. It almost didn't matter for him until he got his head straight and realized that you can't just use your athleticism to get away in the NFL like you did in college. So it really just comes down to whether these players make the transition. Not everybody makes the transition. Trent Richardson was supposed to be a can't-miss running back, and he bombed, obviously. I mean, big time. So does it surprise me that it sounds this bad? Yeah, maybe they're trying to light a fire on him through some coach speak through the media. I don't know. I'm not getting that excited about Amendola because Amendola also never stays on the field for a full season. Right. Maybe Albert Wilson, but Albert Wilson never did much when he was the Chiefs. So I got to tell you, if that's the intriguing one. If I'm going to spend a 14th round pick on, hey, everything goes wrong for Parker, it would actually be Albert Wilson.
Okay, yeah, because here's the thing. I think, you know, if we go ahead and take that leap of faith that Parker, Parker's growth is not what many people expected, then maybe there's value at one of these other guys, and Albert Wilson could be interesting if you follow the money. I mean, you know, they did invest $8 million a year in him. The only other way I want to ask it to you, Jake, is, you know, because these other wide receivers, we're not necessarily hugely confident that any of them can go ahead and grab the brass ring, as it were. Does that maybe add to the narrative, let's say, that maybe Mike Gesicki could be that exception and as a rookie tight end be productive?
Yeah, he might have some value. I mean, you look at what happened last year with Evan Ingram with the Giants.
Right.
There was no options left. But that would be supremely surprising. I don't think Devontae Parker is going to go away to that degree. And then, again, they still have Stills. The Giants lost Odell Beckham and Brandon Marshall, and we're down to Sterling Shepard and Evan Ingram. I mean, to have a comparison for that, we'd probably have to drop down to Albert Wilson and Gesicki and
Roger
and
Lewis
Adola
and stuff.
Yeah, so I mean, there's definitely, you know, again, there's value in Gesicki if Parker is, I don't know what, I don't think they're going to release him. But,
say it, Jake, he's Fugazi.
Yeah, that's possible, but whatever it may be. The point being is Gesicki's going to have some value, but I think it'll be more of, hey, you picked him up for the right week or you played him in a DFS lineup. I don't think it's going to be similar to Evan Ingram.
Okay, fair enough. I got one other thing that kind of I took note of, Jake. And no, I'm not talking about Joe Flacco having his best camp ever because we've talked about Flacco and Lamar Jackson enough, how we think that is going to go down, how we both think the Baltimore Ravens are not necessarily going to be contenders and how that is going to evolve. What did interest me, Jake, yesterday, Green Bay really interests me, okay, because as we talk about the size of the pie, you know, in Green Bay, it's one of the biggest pies out there in the, hey, by the way, Jake, when we talk pie, are we talking pizza pie or dessert pies?
Whatever you feel like, whatever you're hungry for today.
All right, cool. Well, it's breakfast time, right? So maybe we're talking about, because I was like, hey, it's the biggest pie at the, and I didn't know whether to say at the pizza shop or at the bakery. We're going to go bakery because it's early here on Roto Experts in the morning, right? So this Green Bay has one of the biggest pies out there. I am intrigued, Jake, by Ty Montgomery. Ty Montgomery, who's running as like this third down PPR back. And if we believe, you know, because when he was at that wide receiver, when he made that shift over to running back, he didn't really have as much time with Aaron Rodgers, right? Before Aaron Rodgers got hurt, before Ty Montgomery got hurt. If he's now going to be kind of definitive as this PPR kind of back, Jake, tell me why he can't do just what Theo Riddick and Chris Thompson and Duke Johnson do. If the Green Bay pie is bigger, I know there's a lot of other options and stuff, but why isn't Ty Montgomery in the same conversation, you know, with these other big-time PPR backs like Riddick and Thompson, Duke Johnson, and the like? Couldn't he do just the same exact thing in Green Bay?
Not unless Aaron Jones has no value when he comes back. That's the problem. Aaron Jones is back in week three, and Ty Montgomery's not playing in front of Aaron Jones.
So you think Aaron Jones is the pass catching back there?
Yeah, no question.
Oh, okay. See, I thought it was more, and thank you for, you know, clarifying for me. I thought it was more Jake. I thought Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams were more like in Cleveland, how you had two guys who would more be in that kind of early down, allowing Duke to still be that third down kind of role. So I thought Ty would still be that third down kind of role, and it's Williams and Jones fighting for that other kind of work. But Jones is the PPR kind of guy, you're saying?
No, Jones can do everything. Jones is more explosive. Jamal Williams is the better all-around running back, but Jones is definitely more explosive. And if they were trying to use Jones potentially as their number one, he was going to take plenty of the passing work. It wasn't going to be Ty Montgomery still going to get 6 to 8 touches. And that is the best-case scenario. Even the first 2 weeks, it's going to be 6 to 8, as you said, for like the Theo Riddick role, and that's not something you really trust these days anyway. Maybe in a PPR is your third running back, but it's not somebody I'm going to go after there and target just because of some training camp news. So, yeah, it just comes down to, no, I don't have very much interest in Ty Montgomery because it really, for me to have interest or value, one of the three running backs needs to go away.
Okay, it needs to be a timeshare, not a committee. Because then we're exactly slicing it up a little too much. All right, fair enough. I thank you for the clarification. Honestly, I thought that he was like, I had Aaron Jones wrong. I had Aaron Jones pegged as like, you know, fighting with Williams for that other part of the role, you know, similar to how like Hyde and Chubb in Cleveland, similar to how there's like Kerryon Johnson and LGBT rights in Detroit. And then you have the other side of Theo Riddick. But you're telling me that Aaron Jones kind of is more of a, you know, more of a Swiss Army knife than can do it all. And that would then compromise even whatever share of Ty Montgomery has in that pass catching role, despite the fact that the Packers pie is pretty big and pretty tasty. All right, Jake, let's keep it moving though here. And I got to remind people, don't forget to go on over to mybookie.ag. Okay, you could enter the promo code FNTSY. You will get a 50% deposit bonus. And then what you got to do is listen to Roto Experts in the morning. We're giving you over-unders. We're giving you prop bets. We're giving you ways to win that cash. And you'll even have 50% more cash to do it with. Don't forget about the props builder. If you want to massage the lines a little bit, you have the ability to do that over on mybookie.ag. Enter the promo code FNTSY. All right. Jiggy. We want to talk a little bit of running backs, okay? You are the number one ranker in the business. I know you're talking a little bit about that flex league. Frankie Stanfill put it out there a little bit yesterday. He's going to have a stacked field to get through. He's going to have to get through Eric Young of Sanity. He's going to have to get through the All-In Kid. He's also going to have to get through the Spitting Statistician, Maria Marino, also talking a little bit about that first team all lit. But let's give everybody a little bit of help here. All right, let's give everybody a little bit of help here at the running back position. Jake, here's the piece that I want to ask you. I want to ask you to help me. I saw Jake in this flex league that we're doing, and it's not PPR, right? So it's a standard league. I have a piss poor draft spot, Jake. I am in the 7th pick, right? And I think right away, hey, there's these big four running backs. There's AB. There's maybe, you know, I think I'm going to be talking about Saquon Barkley or DeAndre Hopkins, something like that. And if I generally want to get this running back, which is what I probably want to do in round one over, say, a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, but the top four and Saquon are gone, that is where I get a little bit, not confused, but, you know, feeling that the seventh pick is not the best. But talk to me about the top of your ranks. If we take out Gurley, Bell, Johnson, Zeke, and Saquon, I know in non-PPR, you go Fournette, Kamara, Hunt, Cook, guys like that. Talk to me, which of these guys do you think is better set up to be a top pick because of the non-PPR format? My instincts go towards Leonard Fournette, but who's helped by the settings kind of in the back end of that top 10?
None of them really helped by the settings. They're all good picks. You got to take a running back in a non-PPR. None of them get a boost over the others. If anything, it's just more of Kamara takes a little bit of a hit. And that's why Leonard Fournette jumps him, because of the touchdown potential for him with the rushing ability. But, I mean, it's more, well, you got to get past these guys. They're all top 10 running backs. This is what we say all the time, is PPR and non-PPR, people move the needle way too much when it comes to those formats. Most players aren't affected that much by the change from non-PPR to PPR. It's the outliers. Theo Riddick has a big change between the formats. Tariq Cohen has a big change between the formats. Julian Edelman has a big change between the formats. You talk about Leonard Fournette. Leonard Fournette doesn't really move much. And he actually caught 35, 36, somewhere around there, passes last year in 13 games for the people that think that he doesn't even catch the ball. So to move it, the biggest one in this, you got to go deeper into like the top 15. Jordan Howard moves up a little bit. That's really the only thing that really kind of moves there. Like if you're thinking Jordan Howard in the second round, that might be something.
Got you. So if anything, maybe it's a slight bump down for some other people. Maybe guys like a Kamara, maybe a guy like Dalvin Cook, who we expect to do much out of the receiving game.
No.
No? Why not? You don't expect Dalvin Cook to get a just Kamara in that level?
No, right. I'm not moving that up. Dalvin Cook doesn't get a hit in non-PPR. He's not catching that much.
Christian McCaffrey would, though, right?
Yeah, Christian McCaffrey would.
Okay, I'm just looking at, say, like these top 20 backs that are affected, if at all, by the things that we're talking about right now. So you say Kamara, maybe a Christian McCaffrey, not, say, a Dalvin Cook, interestingly enough. Let me ask you something about, I'm looking again, non-PPR rankings, what I'm seeing, and it's a different format than it was yesterday, Jake, so I got to wrap my head around that as it displays on the screen. But go on and get that Roto Experts Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. Don't forget to enter the promo code ALLINKID at checkout. You'll get a special discount. I'm very intrigued by Devontae Freeman, Jake. I think that if you tell me he plays 15, 16 games, I see someone that belongs in the running back one conversation, right? I like this Atlanta offense, second year in the Sarkisian scheme, all this kind of stuff. You know, I love his skill set, okay? The problem with me is twofold, okay? He has a little bit of a history of some of the soft tissue, but more importantly, he's gotten dinged a number of times over the past couple of years. I hear our guy, the fantasy executive, Corey Parson, talk about that he's going to wind up on injured reserve this year. Now, I know, like we've talked about other players and the kind of risk and your risk tolerance, but when we're at this level, finding your RB1, I don't know if this is kind of the question marks that I want. Talk to me a little bit about Devontae Freeman, if you're willing to take the leap of faith and the plunge on Devontae Freeman. And moreover, if you do, what does that mean about Tevin Coleman as a handcuff and or Tevin Coleman as his independent value, if you also think that by the time the fantasy playoffs come around, Devontae Freeman might be on IR? Talk to me about Freeman. How safe is he for you?
He's not, especially with the fact that he's got multiple concussions now. He's not going to change his running style. So you have to be concerned about that. But we also know Devontae Freeman, as you said, over 16 games, he's been the number one running back in fantasy before. That was actually the one year
zero running back theory, right?
That was the year. So, but all that being said, was he still had a terrific season that year outside of Devontae Freeman and the two or three people right around him. He would have finished top 10 any year. He probably would have been top 5 most seasons. So that's all. If we know what Devontae Freeman can be, the running style and how he does it and the fact that he's had so many concussions has to have you concerned. So he's going as an RB2, and that's why he's going as an RB2, and that's why he's fine as an RB2, because you're not going to get very many RB2s with a ceiling higher than him, unless somehow Dalvin Cook falls to you as an RB2, LeSean McCoy stays out of trouble and plays 16 games. He'll, you know, that's somebody that's going to be an amazing RB2. So there's not a lot that you can say that have that kind of ability as an RB2. So you take them and you understand the risk and you make sure you have the running back depth. I think that you also know if you really want Tevin Coleman, you're going to have to overpay to get him because he, as you said, has independent value. He's going in the sixth round, seventh round at latest, and people are drafting him because he already has some weeks where he has value. I don't ever want to start him. You try to figure out what weeks those are is going to be a headache.
Right.
But if Freeman goes down, now you're talking
about
somebody
you have
top 15 running back. So that's why so many people are on Tevin Coleman. I actually haven't even drafted him once this year.
I see that you have Coleman in standard ranks and standard scoring formats. I see that you have him as RB31, right behind guys like Marlon Mack, Deion Lewis, and the suspended Mark Ingram. Let me ask you this, though. Like, Jake, what about specifically the idea of handcuffing, right? If you go ahead and get Devontae Freeman, is there more pressure on you to get Coleman so that you have Atlanta running back more than, say, some other potential handcuffs? Like, is Coleman the number one handcuff for you in the NFL this year?
It is, but I don't handcuff. You know, if you build running back depth, you don't need to handcuff. Handcuff is a waste, in my opinion, because what's your scenario? At best case, you have one running back. That's the problem with handcuffing. People don't think about it that way. Is if you draft somebody on the bench and you're looking for upside and you say, hey, I'm going to take a flyer on Kerryon Johnson instead of Tevin Coleman, and Kerryon Johnson comes out and surprises everybody, turns into Reggie Bush for the Lions or something we just didn't even see, and all of a sudden he's a top 20 running back. You just have a third great running back on your team. Tevin Coleman comes out and breaks out and goes crazy. That's because Devontae Freeman got hurt. You still only have one running back. You didn't double up, and that's why I don't handcuff. You build running back depth. Don't handcuff.
All right, fair enough. Are there any time in the last, like, 3 or 4 years, Jake, where it was viable to start two running backs from the same team? DeMarco Murray and a Derrick Henry and Alvin Kamara. I guess I had Alvin Kamara and a Mark Ingram, right? But was it viable like 2 years ago to have Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman in your lineup on a Sunday?
I mean, you could, but I'm not going to do it because there's going to be too many weeks where, you know, one doesn't do anything and the other one does, and trying to pick which weeks going to do that, you either plug them in all 16 weeks, both of them, or you don't. Because trying to figure that out is going to kill you, and you're going to end up messing. You're going to hurt yourself more than anything.
Yeah, fair enough. And if you want to try to play that whack-a-mole, there is no team that will be more frustrating than the New England Patriots, Jake. I see that you have guys like Sony Michel, number 27. You also, listen, we've got guys like Burkhead at 39. Help me, like, is there any way to make sense of this? Like, you know, Sony Michel was an investment by the New England Patriots in the draft. Maybe they like him, but, you know, there's just too many factors here between Gillislee, Jeremy Hill, who they signed in the offseason, Sony, you know, Rex Burkhead as well. Is there any value in trying to read the tea leaves up there in New England?
No. We just did the Patriots review last week. Nothing's changed. Nothing will change.
Fair enough. Here, can I ask you one? Let me bounce one idea off of you, though. I'm looking at what the New Orleans Saints did last year, right? In an effort to potentially support their aging Hall of Fame quarterback, the team evolved to run the ball a little bit more, which also helped their defense from a time of possession and a field position kind of standpoint. Is there any chance that Belichick does the same kind of evolution to support his aging Hall of Fame quarterback?
Sure, there's a chance, but who the hell knows what he's going to do with it? The difference was is Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara were used consistently every single week with only two options in that backfield. It's still the Patriots.
Got you. So, like, you don't see maybe a universe where, boom, it's Rex Burkhead and Sony Michel, and they run a little bit more and try to take a load off the TB12, especially with...
Well, I said I could see that, but you're still trying to predict the Patriots' backfield of four running backs, so it's a completely different scenario.
All right, fair enough. It's still whack-a-mole, something to look at up there in New England. Jake, when we talked about running backs, one other thing I want to ask you about is these rookies, right? And with rookies, it's not only the skill, Jake, it's their path to opportunity and touches. You know, I was on the first hour talking with Scott, and you know how Scott believes that Chris Carson may hold off Rashad Penny, you know, things of that nature. We're hearing words about the Denver Broncos job wide open. Outside of Saquon Barkley, Jake, are you – in agreement that maybe Ronald Jones and Darius Geis are the two with the kind of clearest path to touches and regular production in the early down running game?
No. I keep telling you this, and I keep telling everybody. It's Darius Geis and then Rashad Penny.
Okay. So you don't believe necessarily that Ronald Jones, or you just don't believe in Chris Carson up there in Seattle?
No, I don't believe in Chris Carson. Everybody has revisionist history. The guy had one good game. One. And everybody just thinks he had an amazing four games, which he didn't, because that backfield was such garbage last year. He had one good game. You don't draft a running back in the first round and not try to play him over top of a seventh-round running back because people think he had one good game.
All right, fair enough. And we know about these guys. We've talked about Nick Chubb. We've talked a little bit about Kerryon Johnson. Jake, real quick, and you know what? Actually, let's do this on the other side of the break. We got to pay a couple of bills here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Jake, what I want to ask you, the last situation in running back I want to ask you about is over there in Indianapolis, okay? Marlon Mack, I don't really see as a huge barrier. You got a kid like Jordan Wilkins, a kid like Nyheim Hines. I think these guys could be intriguing late-round guys down there in Indianapolis. I'd like to see what you think Andrew Luck may be relying on now that Frank Gore is not in the backfield. We'll do that in our efforts to get money in fantasy football this year. It's Roto Experts in the Morning, Jake and Dane. We'll talk Indianapolis Colts, fantasy football team names, and then a little bit of the Major League Baseball trading deadline. Come on back, all in kids, spitting statistician. We having fun in the morning.
Are you new to Daily Fantasy? Are you a veteran? Either way, you can better your chances of winning money and lots of it by going to DailyRoto.com. Multiple people have become millionaires thanks to the guys at Daily Roto. Why not take advice from the experts? You can become a millionaire too. Just go to DailyRoto.com to rock Daily Fantasy Sports.
Number one, hey. Jake, I got to get you in the background on this, maybe a little bit of Nelly action. You know, as we keep it moving here on Roto Experts in the Morning, right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, the all-in kid, the spitting statistician. We're trying to help you be number one in your fantasy football drafts. And Jake, I don't know, I kind of think there may be some potential with these Indianapolis Colts running backs. Listen, mostly because when we talk about opportunity, I don't really believe in Marlon Mack. I think by the second half of this season, we're going to be talking about, you know, Jordan Wilkins and Nyheim Hines as interesting pieces of this offense there in Indianapolis with Andrew Luck back and healthy. Talk to me about Wilkins as this kind of overall back who I think you have some praise for, and maybe you got like Nyheim Hines as a pass-catching option. Like, I just don't believe in Robert Turbin. I don't believe in Marlon Mack. I think these kids that the Colts made an investment in later on in the draft are going to ascend and be on people's radars before too long.
The fact is, when it comes to Marlon Mack, I've said that he always tries to do too much, and that's a huge concern for the NFL level and all that. But the problem is it's not like he's going to go away. They're not going to not use him. As of right now, this is stay away. It's a true three-headed committee. It's a three-headed committee with a terrible offensive line, and one that's going to be, this is going to be pass happy Colts as it has been. So I don't see why anybody wants to get invested with this situation at all, unless it's at a discount at the end of the draft, like a Nyheim Hines and a PPR. I could see that's really about it, and that's just hoping in that scenario that Turbin comes back and does nothing, has no job that he comes back to. And either, you know, Mack or Wilkins gets hurt, because Wilkins is, you know, yeah, I said he's the best all-around talent. Mack is the most explosive and elusive, and he tries to do that too much, and that's his issue. Hines has tons of speed and pass-catching ability, so everybody has something they do in a different way. But that's why all three of them, the Colts are happy to go out with all three of them in their backfield. That's why they didn't chase C.J. Anderson. That's why they didn't go after DeMarco Murray before he retired. They're happy with what they have, and it's going to be a committee that I don't want to be involved with.
All right, fair enough. We'll stay away. Maybe the only off, maybe the only value there is, like you mentioned, Nyheim Hines in a PPR format, especially if you think the offensive line is problematic or if the Colts will be in that kind of situation where they are throwing a lot in the back half of their games. Jake, here's what I want to do. We only have a little bit of time left before the Carton and Friends show takes on over our guys, Craig Carton, Michelle Serpico, and, of course, the fantasy executive, Corey Parsons. But I want to talk a little bit. I want to shift gears, Jake, to Major League Baseball. The trade deadline is today, right? I believe it's like 4 p.m. And this is a non-waiver trade deadline, so I do want to make that clarification because you may see a move or two in the month of August. But this is the non. But those guys have to first clear waivers. There are a number of moves yesterday, Jake. I mean, Ian Kinsler going to the Red Sox. You know, he's going to be in the same clubhouse with his boy Dustin Pedroia now. Adam Duvall to the Atlanta Braves. Keon Keeler to Pittsburgh. I think that is really interesting because what, does that mean the Pittsburgh Pirates see themselves as buyers to me? That's interesting. Lance Lynn moving to New York. He doesn't move the needle for me. It'd be, you know, they weren't able to get a mad bum, a DeGrom, so they're going with the next best option. Fortifying their bullpen and then also maybe getting inning eaters like Lance Lynn. Adam Warren to the Seattle Mariners. But what I think is the most interesting one, Jake, I want to get your take on this one, is the Blue Jays trading Roberto Osuna to the Houston Astros. Like, we talk about, like, can you divorce yourself from the character of this? This is similar to Cubs going out and getting Aroldis Chapman, right? Do you think Osuna could be that piece? He comes back from suspension. I believe it's like August 5th. It's right around the corner, and he is probably going to serve as the closer for these Houston Astros who are in contention and we know needed to build up that bullpen. What do you think about the Osuna move, especially like the character concerns around Osuna? Maybe some people wanted no part of it, but the Houston Astros didn't mind because they're going out and trying to chase another ring.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to get into that side of things. So, you know, up to a team. It's up to a team whether or not they want to invest or not. Like you said, the Cubs with Chapman and the Mets brought back Reyes, and it's, you know, it's what teams want to do. If they want to make that move, they want to make that move, and, you know, that's going to be a decision that they have to make and deal with any potential backlash or fans. And this team has come out and said that if anything were to happen again, they have a zero tolerance policy. And but, you know, some people are saying, and I understand, like, well, you have a zero tolerance policy from the jump off. Why after an excuse? But when you just talk about the baseball side of things, and there's no question he's going to be the closer. He's been one of the best closers for the past couple seasons, and he's going to immediately take care of their bullpen issues. I think it's August 5th as soon as he's ready to be reinstated.
All right, so you're cool with them eschewing the character concerns in
No, don't put words in my mouth. I never said I was
I'm
cool
asking.
With it.
I'm asking, Jake.
No.
I'm asking.
No,
it's like
I
the
I was cool
Anchorman.
It.
It's like the Ron Burgundy with San Diego, you know, with the up tone at the end. Okay, it was more of a question. I do not want to put words in your mouth at all. So the Astros, though, they're okay with it. Like, and you think, let's look at it not from the character side, but from a pure baseball side. Like, they wind up getting the, I guess, maybe one of the most dominant bullpen arms on the market. Do you think, like, just purely baseball fit, not only does this work out for Houston, but what about Ken Giles? Do you think he winds up being the Blue Jays closer for the last couple of months if you're chasing saves in roto formats or something like that?
I'd be surprised if they didn't give him the opportunity to do so. And he's been pitching well in the minors, but I mean, I don't think you make that trade and don't give him the chance.
Okay, fair enough. Talk to me then about Keon Keeler going to Pittsburgh. Like, what are the Pirates doing? Do they see themselves as maybe being able to take a shot? This is the one, you know, people getting traded to Boston, Atlanta, the Yankees, the Mariners, the Astros. That I understand. But the Pirates going ahead and trying to acquire a back end of the bullpen kind of arm, what do you think the Pirates are up to here?
I don't know. Don't ask me to explain it. And I'm serious. I don't know. I don't understand what they're doing.
Right. It's interesting. Like, they're right in the same kind of the place in the standings as, like, the St. Louis Cardinals. Meanwhile, we hear that people are inquiring about Bud Norris, right? And, like, maybe the Cardinals see themselves as sellers. But it's interesting that the Pirates see themselves potentially as buyers. I don't get it. We can't ask Jake about it either. It is a curious move. Jake, one other thing, though, before 4 o'clock today, one of the things we're hearing is this idea that the Washington Nationals may also look at themselves in the mirror as it relates to Bryce Harper. Right now, Bryce Harper has underperformed this year. We know he's a free agent at the end of this season. Talk to me. Let's read the tea leaves on this one a little bit, Jake. Do you think Harper is going to be on the move? And if so, what does this mean for Washington? And what might it mean for a team that's maybe trying to acquire him? Do you think that Harper's going to be on the move in the next, like 7 or 8 hours?
No. He's not going anywhere. You don't have it. It's just the whole thing that they said earlier about the Mets with DeGrom and Syndergaard that, they were all of a sudden considering it again, which they heard for the entire time. They're considering it again at the trade deadline, but they would have to be blown away and blah, blah, blah. And the whole report, and I think it was either Olney or somebody, is saying you can't go this late into the game with somebody who involves that many pieces coming back. And that's the problem. You can't – what you're going to need for the haul for Harper, you can't all of a sudden the day before the trade deadline
just
get your scouts
together
out there to see all the players that you want to see.
Okay, so there's not enough time to kind of understand and identify the right.
Not unless you're getting major leaguers or people already know about, and I don't see anybody being willing to. Who's got that kind of capital outside of the Yankees?
What about a little Shane Bieber for Cleveland?
That's not even close to enough.
No, I'm not saying it's enough, but I'm just trying to find guys who could be part
of
a package
multiple,
that we've
but
seen.
You need, no, my point was you already know about – I said that there's pieces that you already know about. The Yankees have pieces you already know about because you know about Andujar. You know about Clint Frazier. You've seen those plays. Like, you just named one person. The Yankees don't have – the Indians don't have enough people that we know about.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm saying part of a package. We're not trying to – I hear you. I don't think that's the answer. I'm just trying to come up with who are some of those names that fit the bill that you're talking about to be part of a package, not in a –
Right, but there aren't any.
One
it's
for
either,
one.
It's either the Braves or the Yankees that have young talent that's already been seen in the majors. You just, again
– That we've seen.
Go back – because there's no time for it. There's no time to get that kind of talent in a return.
Don't you think, though, that, Jake, like, these scouts are out there – Regardless, right?
Not to that degree.
All right,
no.
Fair
Look
enough,
at the reports
enough.
For the entire last week. That how many scouts were at Jesse Sessfield's start and
right.
all the rest. Like the scouts see these players all year long, but they don't pay that. Like, they're not at specific games for specific players. They're watching the entire team, which is kind of trying to analyze 25 players versus just one. You're going to get a lot better detail on the one player if you're there specifically to see somebody.
Okay, fair enough. But listen, regardless, in the next 7 hours, okay, the non-waiver trade deadline in Major League Baseball will come and go. There should be some moves to talk about, even if they're lower level kind of guys, even if they're more bullpen kind of arms. You know, for example, I know the Padres have been contacted about guys like Yates and Stammen. You know, would you agree, Jake, that like, I guess, looking for saves or people who now will come into new roles or lose their role because of going to teams. Is that, like, the biggest thing that the fantasy manager has to worry about when we cross the trade deadline time?
What, is chasing or looking for saves?
Yeah, that sort of thing. Because as people move around, that, like, they're actually losing saves or gaining saves because of the role that they're in. And I think that's more so or less so than, starting pitchers or position players.
It's the same reason I want to play in points leagues, and this is the same reason I don't play in mono leagues in fantasy baseball, because if you lose somebody at the trade deadline, sent across leagues, you're screwed. I mean, there's nothing for you, and you can't predict that. No matter what people try to say at the beginning of the season, you can't predict that, because teams end up contending that you didn't think, teams that weren't contending end up contending, and they make trades that you just weren't expecting, or whether that goes cross league. And same thing with the bullpen situation is, you know, you look at the Mets were supposed to, whether you believed it or not, you could say, oh, I never believed it, but the Mets were supposed to be playoff contenders, not looking to trade Jairus Familia. Well, they ended up being one of the worst teams in the league and traded him away, and now you don't have any saves from Familia. Like, it just comes down to you're trying to predict something 4 months ahead of time when you're drafting of teams' records at the middle of the trade deadline and know where they're going to go. And, you know, you can't get rid of closers in fantasy. But one of the if you're playing rotisserie, this is one of the reasons that instead of the save categories, I prefer the holds plus saves. Because it actually gives value to relievers as a whole. And somebody like Josh Hader is one of the best holds plus saves relievers in fantasy baseball. So that's the way people you should. That's the only thing. You should get rid of saves. You should either play holes plus saves rotisserie or just move to points.
Right, and that kind of takes away some of the risk, right? Like a guy who was getting saves, let's say he does get traded to another bullpen where he's not the closer anymore, but still can contribute to that holds plus saves.
Saves
category.
Is a dumbass stat anyway.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's very, very interesting. You talk about these situations like people knew Britton was going to be on the move in Baltimore, but then the Orioles turn around and trade Brad Brock also. You know what I'm saying? And we're talking about potentially a guy like Michael Givens or something like that. It is very hard to get ahead of the game when it talks to chasing saves. But when these moves do happen, it creates opportunity if you are tuned in to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Hey, Jake, we only got a couple of minutes
even
before Carton.
Look at Osuna. I mean, he ended up being traded because of his off-the-field problems. Right. But if you take away the off-the-field problems, even as bad as the Blue Jays were, they weren't trading Osuna. Like, they weren't. You know, they had plenty of years of control still, and you know they can continue to look till next year. So there's just another one.
Yeah, and what you're saying, Jake, is true. Like, to try to predict these things, there's just so many factors, right? Of how will the team be in contention or not? Whether the contract status of some of these guys, you know, so it's a little hard to get ahead of, but you definitely want to keep it locked so that you could respond in kind. As we've talked about, the trade deadline in Major League Baseball, the non-waiver trade deadline happens in just over 7 hours from now. We'll make sure to let you know anything that happens today on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. All right, Jake, we are doing team names, okay? And I have a couple of submissions that I want to bounce off of you, see if they fit. One of them, I got to tell you, is my new number one. So let me bounce some of these off you. John Beardsley, who we've heard of before, he had Russian Fournette, who you were like, that's okay. He hit me up on Twitter with another one. He's talking about Aaron Rodgers here. What about Aaron the side of caution? Like air on the side of caution.
Nah, I'd rather take the Fournette one.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. What about, we're talking a little bit about Alvin Kamara here. Derek Davis hit me up on Twitter and said, I actually don't understand this one, so maybe you could help me out. Alvin and the Chipmunks? It's not like Alvin and the Chipmunks, but he says ship in quotation marks. Maybe he means like a championship. Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Oh, is that what he means?
Anyway, I don't know. I'm wondering. I don't know, actually.
I guess
I was thinking
I guess
maybe that, you knew a reference that I didn't.
No, that would be the assumption I would make too. Is championship Alvin and the Chipmunks,
like the chip, right? He's going to win the chip, yeah. Alvin and the Chipmunks. Interesting. But here's one that I like. I got to tell you what, Jake, I like this one, and it has to do with your boy Leonard Fournette, who you already have up there. But I think this one is far better. It is my new number one. Are you ready for this one? This is out of Jim Martell. He goes for Netflix and chill.
That's pretty good.
Like Netflix, and come on, Jake, that's a good one.
I saw it's pretty good.
Is it good enough to get up into your top five? Can I bump Russian Fournette? Is it in your top five, Jake?
You said it was your number one.
It is my number one, but I'm asking about you and your top five. Can it find its way into the top five?
I would like it better than the Fournette one, so yeah.
Okay, all right. So we're gonna bump Russian Fournette down a little bit. We're going to bump him up to your new number two, and we're going to make Leonard for Netflix and chill out of Jim Martell is up there for you now. We got plenty of time left. We still got about a month to convince Jake which ones he likes for his top five. I personally have for Netflix and chill as the new number one, along with things like Jimmy G-Spot, My Ingram, Toenail Hurts, Make This House My Homes, and good old Bilal Ride for Bilal Powell. We're going to try and fill out Jake's top five. Jake is busy, as always, on the network with everything from Fantasy Football Frenzy. We got On Target as the pod. A lot of ways to hear Jake and his number one accuracy ranks in the business. Don't forget to go on over and get that Roto Experts exclusive edge fantasy football package. Enter the promo code ALLINKID at checkout. Jake, tomorrow we'll talk a little bit more about the running backs and maybe move into your number one wide receiver ranks. There'll probably be plenty of news and notes from around training camp today. Hope everyone comes out of today's practices healthy and 100%. Jake, you have a great rest of your day. We'll talk to you tomorrow, bright and early here, Roto Experts in the Morning, all right?